I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to episode number 97. Tommy, is that correct?
I believe so, my brother.
I don't even know what damn episode. It doesn't really freaking matter. man, we got a fun week because we were finally in the same place at the same time and we watched the same event. Was that a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Incredible. You also got to eat dinner with my animal children, which you got a taste of. So
I love them. I got them all fired up.
Yeah, man, it was incredible. Incredible event. I mean, that I think that's an understatement. You and I have not spoken about the events.
We haven't. So. And I think that makes this more authentic. Wait, so two things. I got complimented a lot on our podcast at the event, which means even Nittany Lion fans are listening, which is fantastic. And, you know, Tommy, a handful told me that you were just too loud on this podcast. So you might have to simmer it down a little bit.
Like loud in terms of decibel level or just what I stand for speaks so loudly. It overwhelms what you say.
I think they were referring to decibel level, but I guess I can't be 100%.
All right, well then I'll tone it down for the Pennsylvania peeps who like, you know, they like a safe and quiet and happy place. No, I'm just kidding. I got a few compliments, a lot more than I would have predicted. Just going to the bathroom or walking into the gym, and so it's cool to see the passion that the people of Pennsylvania have for wrestling, that they'd be listening to our podcast, recognize us. I just think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, fantastic. So let's get into this dual meet. I called it the greatest dual meet of all time, and I wish there was someone who could give us a historical significance of not how the match turned out, not what these people eventually accomplished, but at the time of the dual meet, February 3rd, was this the two most accomplished lineups of all time? Because we had, even with Nolfa, we had 7 NCAA champions. We had a junior world champion. We had 2 senior world team members. We had an Olympic champion. I mean, I just, I have a hard time imagining there was at some point a duel better than this.
Yeah, I believe it was the most accomplished wrestlers on the mat at the time in a duel meet ever. In the history of NCAA wrestling, I thought that the environment, the atmosphere that Penn State and Rec Hall had was second to none, Ben. I mean, I know you've wrestled in some cool venues. I thought that the way that crowd behaved and the way that they reacted to what was going on the mat was just awesome. It was the greatest ever.
Yeah,
I mean, it has to be. I mean, I'm a fan of the Bucks. I was on the losing end of the greatest ever, but I was so happy that I made the drive out there with my kids to see that. It was incredible.
So I'm going to disagree with you there, and I made the comment before, and I had a handful of fans give me shit about it, that this should have been in some kind of super dome type of venue where you could sit 60,000. And, you know, obviously, was this a great environment, Tommy? Yes, absolutely it was, okay? But anyone who's been at, say, a UFC event where there's 20,000 or something like that, it can get bigger, it can get better. And it was great, but the other thing I said to I went with my high school coach, John Messerberg. The other thing I said to him on the way out is, this would have been more fun if we had people cheering for everything. But, Tommy, there was essentially 98, possibly 99% Pennsylvania State fans, and it was like you were up there at the rafters, and you had your little chunk of 50, and then if you looked all around that, there was like 2 Ohio State here, 2 there. And so when Ohio State did something good, there really wasn't any cheering going on.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that just because I thought it was an incredible atmosphere, I thought it could have been better, the reasons you stated. And I would also say, I just sound like such a complainer because the Bucks lost even with Nolf out. But it was a strategic ambush, I'm convinced.
And I think so, too.
Boy, did – boy. boy, did they succeed.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
When Nate Tomasello got taken down, it was like, well, now I know why they did this. This is a freaking ambush.
Yeah.
I mean, holy cow. What an environment.
It was so awesome. Tommy, when he got thrown through that table, which is like, like WWF shit. And from your side, you couldn't see it. But he got headlocked. His damn foot went straight through that table. I mean, the whole place went bonkers. I mean, it was like,
yeah, it was,
wow.
It was a strategic ambush executed flawlessly. Would I say it's best for the sport? I mean, hey, we're talking about it right now, so there's something to be said for that. But man, what an environment! In a lot of ways, I got to give him a lot of credit. In a lot of other ways, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of bush league type stuff, so I got mixed feelings on it. But they out wrestled the Bucks too. I mean, they out wrestled Ohio State, which it's hard for me to admit that, but you just can't say it any other way. So, tip of the cap to the Nittany Lions.
I 1,000% agree. So let's get into these matches, and we kind of started with, and there, you know, there.
Can I make one more comment, generally speaking, before we get into the matches?
I suppose, but I'm excited to get into these matches.
Well, let me make one more comment.
Go.
Can I do that?
Sure.
So I will say, when I was driving home, and you're going to get mad about this, maybe, but I honestly
what happened to your car on the way home?
I'm driving home in freaking 3 inches of snow, slush on the ground. I got a nice vehicle. It's my wife's vehicle. I got it for her. I said, I'm taking it for the weekend because, you know, I got all my kids with me and stuff. And my front differential gave out while I was in four-wheel drive on Interstate 80, pulled over to the side of the road. I got semi-trucks past me at 70 miles an hour with my three kids in the car, all under the age of 8. I'm crapping my drawers, Ben. The Bucks just lost the night before. I had to pay $850 in AAA, you know, towing charges to go all the way to Columbus. And me and my family rode in the back of a tow truck all the way back to Columbus. So it was quite a humbling exit from the state of Pennsylvania. And my car is currently being fixed. It's under full warranty. So our listeners will, you know, I don't have to do a GoFundMe page or anything to pay for this.
No one will donate to that anyways.
Yes, I'm happy. I'm happy to be back in Ohio. So that was that. So that, but that's not the comment I wanted to make. The comment I wanted to make, Ben, and this is just how I feel. So when the Ohio State job came available 10 years ago or so, it basically created a transformational shift, a tipping point, if you will, in the college wrestling landscape, in my opinion, where Ohio State reallocated some resources to fund the program. Tom Ryan came aboard. Cale Sanderson jumped ship to Penn State. And as we all know, Pennsylvania has been the best high school wrestling state in the union for the past few decades.
And
Ohio probably is second best. And when I was watching
I think Jersey and California would argue with you, but, you know.
That's fine. You're aiding. Yeah, that's fine. You're aiding to my point. And what I saw was arguably the two best wrestling states, Ohio and Pennsylvania, in a duel. It was the center of college wrestling, and the guys on the team were primarily Ohio and PA kids, and then you have a few New Jersey kids, you have a California kid in Neville's, and then you had two Maryland guys.
What about the Texas Bo Nickel?
You got so you had a potpourri of some other states, and I just thought almost like wrestling finally found the place it's always supposed to have been. And I know that sounds weird to Iowa and Okie State and Iowa State, but that was an accurate representation of wrestling from the grassroots level all the way up, in my opinion.
You know what, Tommy? This is funny, but I had literally the exact same thought while I was sitting there watching that. I was thinking Pennsylvania, Ohio, two of the best. I didn't say number one and two, but two of the best.
Right
next to each other. And two, obviously, powerhouse university sport athletics departments in other sports as well. And it was just fitting. And that's why I was kind of thinking in my head of, you know, it would be, you know, I don't know if you remember, but, and they've done this, I'm sure, but like Missouri and Kansas, who are rivals, used to hold stuff right in the middle in Kansas City. And, you know, I know Missouri and Illinois did it with St. Louis also. But I was thinking, if this was in Pittsburgh, It's not exactly in the middle, but it's pretty damn close to the middle of these two programs. Like, if they could do something
close enough, right?
Close enough. And I mean, this is like, these two teams are going to be, they're going to be powers for a long time. I mean, we got a long time till we see Pennsylvania or Ohio State waning in their influence. Now, are they going to finish 1-2 every single year? No, they're not. But, you know, I would be surprised to see either of them out of the top five in the next 5 years, which is the recruits
no doubt.
They're getting in the coaching.
I would agree with that. I mean, Ohio State has a few more question marks than Penn State going into next season. That's no secret. But you would think you'd still be hard-pressed to get them out of the top five and probably
exactly.
top two or three if I had to guess.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, so, I'm with you.
I would like to see, wait.
General comment. Now we can dive in.
Okay, so
right,
I think they
cool.
should do one in Pittsburgh because it's right in the middle at some point in time.
I'm in on that.
Okay. All right, so here's what I got. I got 25. I'm sitting there. I'm expecting the Pennsylvania crowd to get rowdy, but Penn State brings out Carson Coon, who's like 29 years
that's
old.
Right.
Maybe that's an exaggeration. It's pretty damn old.
He's your age, isn't he, Ben?
Maybe not quite. I'm getting pretty old now. But, you know, he's got
right,
some years
right.
on him. And
right.
I expected him to gas so hard because this is his first collegiate match in a long time. First time making
right.
the weight, first time everything. And so, you know, Nato, so I thought maybe he comes out with some fire, but Nato gets that first takedown relatively easily. And I thought, oh, this is going to go downhill really fast for this guy. And then he hits a takedown, and then right off the escape, he hits a head throw. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And the freaking Rec Hall went berserker.
They went berserker. And I'll tell you something that's in my opinion is that basically Nate Tomasello, when he was on top and he was trying to trip Carson Coon back down to the mat, he basically slipped on a banana peel that was on the mat and fell on his face. Carson Coon did nothing to deserve the first takedown. But
fair enough.
The crowd goes absolutely berserk, and it causes Tomasello to get completely out of sorts.
Yes.
Completely out of sorts.
Yes.
And then now Carson Coon's feeling the mojo of the takedown he really didn't earn, and now he's freaking headlocking the dude.
Yes. That's a very accurate representation of what happened in that match.
I don't know if you've ever wrestled in Rec Hall, but I wrestled Pat Cummins my junior year in Rec Hall. It was one
really?
Of the only two times he beat me. We wrestled 13 times, and he cradled me in the third period for the first time he ever beat me. And Rec Hall obviously wasn't as raucous as it was on Saturday, but I remember when I got cradled, I was like, I think the crowd at Rec Hall is living inside my headgear right now. It was so loud. And I can't imagine what the Ohio State guys were thinking when that stuff would happen, on top of the momentum and the energy it would give the Penn State guys.
So, Tommy, the score at the end of the first period was 9-8, correct? Or 8-7, maybe it was 8-7.
8-7 or 9-8, one of the two.
Okay, so we'll go 8-7. So, anyways, so, you know, Tomasello comes back to pretty much smack him. I think it was 21-12 was the final score. But, you know, I know a handful of people were picking a tech fall in that match. They got a major. And, you know, I'm going to relate this back to myself, Tommy. I think Carson Coon, just by his performance, despite the fact that he lost by 9 points, gave some life to the Penn State wrestling team because he went out there and fought.
I'm with you.
And
he did fight.
In my first match ever as a Missouri Tiger, we wrestled Oklahoma State Cowboys, and I got drawn to be the first match. And I wrestled this gentleman named Chris Pendleton, who was number one ranked in the country. And at that point in time, in 2003, Missouri did not have one win over Oklahoma State University.
Right.
And I went out there and I fought Chris Pendleton. I got up 7-1 and I blew it and I lost 9-7 in overtime.
Right.
But I think, you know, the fact that I was willing to step up and fight the number one guy in the country, you know, helped give some energy to the program. And that was what I felt out of the 125-pound match. On Saturday night.
I don't doubt that for a minute. Couldn't agree more. I would also say, though, that even though Nate Tomasello wrestled a pretty ugly match, especially in the beginning, the fact that he kept his composure and still got the major, even though Ohio State was counting on him for maybe 15 points, I thought that the way that he fought left every reason for Ohio State to believe that they were doing a good job too, because he took a bad situation and still got the job done.
Sure, that's fair. Okay, that's So then at 133, Pletcher comes out and gets two easy takedowns in the first. But again, the Penn State guy doesn't back down, and Corey Keener fights back. And, it was down to the wire. Keener, it was 5-4. Keener was attacking the entire time. And, he was never really able to penetrate the defense of Pletcher. Luke Pletcher's got a really solid baseline defense where it's hard to get to his legs. And so it just kind of shut him down.
I'll tell you the other thing about Pletcher, who I think he's capable of major decisioning a guy like that, so that was disappointing. But the other thing that Pletcher has that these guys make his opponents gun-shy is his counterattacks are really good. So, yeah, he's not super offensive, but he's very solid offensively when he does go, and his counterattacks are good enough to where he also keeps his opponents at bay where nobody's doing a whole lot of anything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's fair. And, one thing that we saw, and I know we'll probably debate this in later matches, but, the Pennsylvania crowd was calling for stalling. It almost reminded me of that I was in Iowa. But the ref did not call a whole lot of stalling. He called a little bit, but, I mean, there's a bunch of times where you could have argued that he could have called it more often. I think the only time I would say he called it fast was the Zane Keyshawn match. I didn't think Keyshawn was stalling, and he called it in the first period. Besides that, I thought he was fairly slow on the stalling calls.
I was kind of unimpressed with Penn State's calling for stalling as a crowd.
You mean unimpressed? Like they should have called for it louder, or what?
Well, when I was driving out there, I was talking to my dad in the car, and I meant this when I said it, and I still kind of feel this way. It's like, you know what's cool about the Penn State crowd is they're knowledgeable. They actually they love wrestling. They know wrestling. Whereas Iowa fans, they're just Hawkeye fans. They're not even necessarily wrestling people. They're just Hawkeye honks. And we agreed with that because and I just thought that their chance for stalling in a lot of situations was like, I hope you're just trying to get a stall call and you don't really believe that Ohio State's guy is stalling. But I would agree with that mostly with what you just said then.
Yeah, definitely. So now we got 141, and I thought this was going to be the match of the night. But after 112, so I said to my coach, I said, this is going to be the match of the night. And then I retracted that very quickly, and I said, shit, with what happened at 125 pounds, nothing could top that match. That match was bonkers.
That's right. I'll tell you one thing I said going into the duel, and I meant it when I said it, is I texted my text group, which is called the Ohio State Wrestling. So these are all Buckeye ex-wrestlers. My ex-head coach, Mitch Clark, Blake Kaplan, Johnny Clark, a lot of Buckeyes. And I said, Ohio State wins the duel, 5-5, McKenna saves the day.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and so in my mind, and they're like, you're crazy, McKenna's not going. I was like, I just think he's going to dial in. This is a guy that got third in the country. When the team needs him, he's going to step up. And so, obviously, when McKenna won the match, I was feeling pretty good, man, as a Buckeye. I'm sure you can't disagree with me on that either. I mean, I was feeling good.
I think you should have been feeling pretty good. I mean, at that point, I was going through all the possibilities at which Penn State could win, and they were They went from slim to almost none.
Right.
And so, okay, so let's get into this 141 match. I thought I was doing the match tonight. After 125, it was impossible.
Ben, let me correct myself. I said 6-4. Ohio State, McKenna saves the day.
On this podcast, because I thought you said like 8-2 or something.
I changed, leading up to game time. I said 6-4. I thought Colin Moore was going to win. So when McKenna won, I'm like, we're good here because. And it was 6-4 because Nolf is out. And I'm like, we're good here, man.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Anyways.
I don't want to be critical of Joey McKenna, but for me, Tommy, looking in someone's eyes tell me a lot. And McKenna said the whole time, what his eyes told me was that he wanted to win that match easy. And he has great skills, but, man, I don't know. I think he's burnt out, Tommy. I don't see a hugely bright next 2 years for him because that weight class is so deep and so tough. And although he's highly skilled, man, he does not look like he's got the fire of his younger years.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think that he has consistency issues, of which I will not deny. And unfortunately, I think you could argue that he has a hard time getting up for every single match, which is kind of counterintuitive to being a national champion. But I think he does have a fire in his belly, and I think that he showed it on Saturday. Because I think Nick Lee is good. I think he's as advertised. And I think, honestly, Nick Lee only had one takedown. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ben.
I think that's
correct. That one takedown was from basically a headgear fix brain fart from Joey McKenna.
That's correct. You know, Nick Lee, I want to pull that back because some people act like Nick Lee is the next coming of Zane Rutherford. And now I don't know how it's going to play out. I can't see the future. I think he's been pretty darn good. But if we remember, Zane only lost 3 matches his freshman year. And it was
– And he beat Logan Stieber.
He beat Logan Stieber, who's one of the all-time greats. And he lost twice to Stieber, and he lost once to Mitchell Port. And, you know, Nick Lee's already got 5 losses. And while he can be dynamic offensively at times, he still struggles on bottom, and he still struggles when people attack him.
Yep.
And that was, you know, when we showed I think Joe McKenna got 3 takedowns. Is that correct or no? 2. No, he got 2.
Three. No, I'm pretty sure he got 3. If I'm not mistaken.
Well, he got one in the first. He got one right at the buzzer. Remember when he pulled him, like, back in the crab ride?
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, it was. I think you're right. And then one in the third. And so, you know, so Nick Lee is still susceptible to other people's offense, and he's susceptible to a really good rider. And when you think about who's at that weight class, Bryce Meredith, Kevin Jack, Jaden Ironman, those guys are going to ride, and they're going to ride hard. So while Nick Lee might end up being really good, he's going to have a hard time finding the podium in March.
I can agree with that. He's just a good freshman, though. I mean,
he's good.
He's not much different than Ironman was this time last year. You know what I mean? In fact, Ironman was struggling to find himself this time.
Well, if you remember, Ironman started the season by making weight at 133, and I think that was really hard on him. He went up to 141, which, you know, weight changes in the middle of the season are obviously always challenging. And then, you know, at Nationals, man, Jaden wrestled his butt off because, you know, going into Nationals, I was kind of questioning how he was going to be doing. And he really, you know, he beat McKenna in the wrestlebacks, and then he beat Klodzik. He just had a great wrestlebacks and won a lot of matches. So, you know, could I see Nick Lee doing that exact same thing that Jaden did last year? Yeah, I definitely could. But if I had to bet on it right now, I don't think I'm picking Nick Lee above 6th place.
Okay, I can deal with that. I was impressed with Joey McKenna more than I was disappointed in Nick Lee, at least in my opinion, Ben.
That's fair. That's definitely fair. All right, let's get to the Keyshawn Zane. So, again, I thought this was the only match where Stallion was called quickly. You know, Zane goes out there and hand fights hard. I thought Keyshawn did a great job. I thought he didn't give too much ground. Zane wasn't attacking overly hard. And he gets dinged for stalling. And I was just like, well, based on what's happened in all of the matches up to this point, I don't see it. I really don't.
No, I didn't see it either. Didn't see it at all. And we'll get into this at 57, but how about Zane Rutherford basically tearing Keyshawn limb from limb on top with that bow and arrow?
So the whole Buckeye squad, sans a couple of them, I feel like they have some liabilities on bottom. You know, Miles obviously even looked bad on bottom. Colin Moore couldn't get away at the end of that match. Bo got ridden for the last minute and 15 seconds. Tashawn struggled on bottom. So, man, I think the Buckeyes need to get something going on bottom.
Well, I mean, I think the Buckeyes need to get something going on bottom. And I agree with every comment you just made other than Keyshawn struggled on bottom. Come on, Ben. We're talking about Zane Rutherford here.
He still struggled on bottom.
Anyways, I agree, though. I agree. Rutherford's bow and arrow is deadly. Yeah. And this guy, I mean, if he could rip your leg off and beat you over the head with it, he would do it.
I think he would do it.
I mean, he is vicious on top. Vicious.
Yes. You know what, Tommy? I almost nailed this prediction, and I would like to point out. Zane was up by 12 points, which was my exact pick for the match, with 16 seconds left. And I was cheering for him not to get the last turn, so I had a correct prediction. And then he ripped him over with the bow and arrow with like 14 seconds left.
And think about this. We gave up a tech with under 20 seconds to go at 49. We gave up a major at 65 with under 10 seconds to go. We gave up a major at 84 with under 10 seconds to go.
Dang.
And we lost the dual meet by 1 point. And if all Kyle
Brutal.
Snyder had to win, and if all Kyle Snyder had to do was win by eight, he probably would have won by eight.
Wait,
we'll get
Tommy,
to that.
So what did you know going into the heavyweight match what the tiebreaker criteria was?
Yeah,
I did
because I was in the Ohio State crowd, and everybody was in the know, and they said he has to win by 13 or more. I knew that before
Wait,
he even 13, shook hands.
What do you mean 13 or more? 15 is a tech fall. Why are you saying 13?
Because it would have come down to the third tiebreaker, Ben.
Okay.
Which was match point.
I thought the tiebreakers went most wins, most 6 points, most 5 points, most 4 points. Is that not correct?
I could be wrong because ever since, I mean, I that's what the crowd, I can't verify that they were right, but everyone in the Ohio State crowd, this includes all the parents, I sat behind Miles Martin's parents and in front of Jeff, Bo Jordan's parents.
Rough night,
and they
Tommy.
Said, tough. I was sandwiched between a tough, some people that had a tough night, but Penn State had 85 match points to Ohio State's 73 match points
sure.
going into heavyweight, and that was the criteria of which would be decided the duel. So he had to win by 13, which we can get into it now, but I was trying
no,
to
let's
and
save
he,
it.
So
let's
it caused
–
yeah, okay. So okay. There you go.
So back to Keyshawn. Okay, Keyshawn goes up 4-1, which is like, wow. He gets two takedowns in a row at the end of the first. Why does he got to try to crab ride him? Just drive him forward, and at the worst case scenario, you give up a 1 point escape, and you're up 4-2 on the freaking Hodge Trophy winner going in the second period.
That's exactly right. Could
what?
Not agree more.
Why would you pull him back?
I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. And the other thing too is, and I know Zane Rutherford's got to feel like a freaking praying mantis on top, but
yes.
How do we give up bow and? I mean, I don't think I've ever given up a bow and arrow since I was like 9 years old, and it seems to be happening a lot in college wrestling.
I mean, you know, people are attacking that position quite a bit, but yes, with what you're saying, I don't recall ever giving up a bow and arrow, and now that it is gaining popularity, likely because of how well Zane is using it, you would think more people would be aware of what's going on. Is that fair?
Yes, it has to be the most painful hold in wrestling.
Yeah, I would say if it's not the most painful, it's getting damn near up there. Because yeah, that's a pretty awful position to be in. And I think
Zane Rutherford, his nickname should be the accordion man, because he takes his opponent's bodies and just does an accordion music dance.
I thought you were saying the archer because he makes everyone a bow and arrow.
he could be that Robin Hood. He's
Robin Hood. There you go. all
That's
right.
That's actually pretty good.
Micah versus Bo Pfeiffer. What do you got?
I mean, I thought he looked outstanding against an inferior opponent and did his job and got the tech ball. I mean, that's
exactly.
kind of – I don't want to spend too much time on it. What do you think?
Yes, next topic. So it's 15-5 after Micah gets the tech ball. It's
hey, okay, so think of me as a Buckeye, Ben.
You are a Buckeye.
We won – I'm at intermission. We won 4 out of 5 matches, okay? We're up 15-5. I mean, I would have bet a lot of money we were going to win the duel. I'm talking a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy, I'm going through scenarios in my head. Even if they get, even if it goes decision Chenzo, decision Hall, decision Martin, and decision Penn State at 97, it's still 17-15, and all Kyle Snyder's got to do is win.
That's exactly right.
And that's what Miles
losing.
That's why
I'm running all the scenarios in my head, all of them. Because obviously you're not expecting Campbell to win. Obviously it's very conceivable that Bo Jordan could lose. Extremely conceivable. Right, but it's conceivable. So I'm thinking, worst case scenario is we give up four decisions and Kyle walks out there and smacks Neville's around and we're out of here, 18-17. I'm thinking of all these things. So I would have just... I would have bet the house, man. I would have bet a lot of dough. And I don't even think Cale would have taken the bet. I mean, I don't think anybody could have predicted that.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe Cale knew something. So let's just start going. So 65, Chenzo over T-Shot. You know, T-Shot, I thought he wrestled respectably, especially considering what I saw him versus Michigan State. I thought it was respectable. I mean, you know, maybe it wasn't great, but not terrible. I don't know. Am I off?
I just thought, yeah, I don't disagree at all. I'm just disappointed in the carelessness out of Keyshawn, Tayshawn, I think is how you pronounce it, and Miles. There was carelessness at the end of the match with the team score and the balance that bothered me. But I thought his effort and his performance was respectable, with minus the carelessness at the end.
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
You can't even call it quitting. I saw some people calling it quitting.
Yeah, well, Miles kind of laid on bottom, but we can get to that later.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
So, hey, after Bo got that first takedown and rode for a significant portion of time, man, I was kind of feeling like he was going to win the match, Tommy. I really was.
No, if you give Bo Jordan a takedown with a minute riding time, I'm betting on him to win the match. I don't care who it is.
So you feel confident also?
Yeah, I was. And you know, I love Bo, and I think he can beat Mark Hall the next time out. There was nothing that happened in that match that makes me feel otherwise. But Ben, he didn't take a shot. He didn't go to his knee the whole match.
Yeah.
And so that obviously, he's just... There's guys that, you know, you can't protect anything, and it's a lot easier said than done, but you got to wrestle. You know, wrestling is a constant thing. You don't steal a win when you're trying to be the last man standing on the podium. You don't steal anything. You take it. And so I feel like Bo, once he got the first takedown, he was trying to sneak out of the match with the win, as opposed to saying, I'm bringing it, I'm going to win. And, you know what I mean. I'm just having a hard time explaining it.
I get exactly what you mean, Tommy. And the one thing, Flo has been putting up clips of the Penn State-Ohio match, I hope, on Instagram, and I hope you haven't been scrolling because it's going to make you quite depressed. But I watched a few of them, and one of them is a Colin Moore one. But I watched the duck that Mark Hall hit on Bo in the second, and it was
nothing Bo could have done to stop that. That was
why crazy. I'm gonna argue at that point, because after watching it 10 times, because Instagram just keeps looping it, and so it just loops it and loops it and loops it. So I just sat here for like 2 minutes and just watched it play and watched it play and watched it play, and it wasn't that great of a duck, Tommy. It really wasn't. He steps one way, he goes the other way. It's like, Bo, you fell on your face. How did you not feel that coming? Mark Hall's got a great duck under, boy. Don't pressure so hard.
Well, okay, yeah, so he walked into it, but the skill and the timing of it is second. He's got a hell of a super duck. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's what I just said. He's got a great duck under. Stop pushing into him.
Right. Well, I think Bo does a good job of crowding his opponent. I just wish he would crowd and attack, not just crowd.
Yeah, but if you push into Mark Hall, we've discussed this specific topic before, Tommy. Mark Hall doesn't have a great go-get-him type of penetration. He can't cover distance that often. Mark Hall relies on a lot of scrambling, a lot of counter offense, and can score really well if you pressure into him. And
that's
so,
correct. We talked about
Bo
this.
Bo Jordan, this is his fourth time wrestling, Mark. Man, how he fell for that duck under. It just wasn't that great of a duck under.
Well, okay, that's fine. I'm going to get into the thing that, and I love the Bucks. You know I love the Bucks,
yes.
And I love these guys. I know that I've known them since they were kids, a lot of these guys, Bo Jordan in particular. And I hope I get a chance to speak with them. Maybe I will. But, Ben, I've been in three national finals. You've been in four. Mm-hmm. And I just think that when you wrestle, when you try to win, go through that national tournament with 32 people in your bracket, you just got to go in there and take it from anybody who's trying to take it from you. You got to go in there and freaking rip the victory from their hands, put them in yours, and say, I'm taking names here. That's the attitude and mentality you got to have. And I feel like sometimes really great wrestlers try to sneak their way in there. They try to like come in through the back door with how they're strategically wrestling each opponent. And I saw Bo do that on Saturday night. I just wanted to go out there and freaking wrestle. It's almost like I wanted to give up a takedown or two to start the match. So it forces him to wrestle that way.
Yes.
I agree with
this statement for sure.
Okay. So anyways, that's the freaking enthusiasm I have when I think of that match. That's what I'm thinking about.
Okay. Yeah. And I agree totally. And, you know, I think across the board, Tommy, and I think it was Rhett Call. So I'll talk about the editor about, you know, performances returning to the normal, to the average. I think Penn State performed well. I think Ohio State performed subpar to what they're capable of. And this is one of those, you know, we'll talk about Miles next. But Bo got ridden out, I think, the last minute and 15 seconds of that match.
He did.
And I think that's unacceptable. I mean, man, you're a you're a senior. You've had three All-Americans. You got to get off bottom. You got a minute and 15 seconds. And Mark Hall is not Zane Rutherford on top. Is he bad on top? Absolutely not. He's pretty darn good on top. But he's not Zane. He's not one of those guys that's just going to crush you.
Yes. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, Ben, the difference in this duel is that nine Penn State guys either did what they were supposed to do or exceeded what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And on the Ohio State side, only one guy did what he was supposed to do or exceeded it. Actually, there's a few guys that did, you know, that's not true. But there's only one guy that exceeded what he was supposed to do, and Joey McKenna. Then there's two or three guys that did what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, definitely. So Miles looks great the first, say, 2 minutes of the match. I thought his movement was great. His counterattacks looked good. He finally gets in on that one. He's rear standing, Tommy. And you know freaking Bo's going to stand and grab. This is like you know Mark Hall's going to duck. You know Bo's going to try to stand and grab me. Miles, come on, man.
Yeah, I know. I was disappointed in that. I mean, it's a lot easier said than done. Bo's a phenomenal scrambler. Possibly second to only you in the past 15 to 20 years of college wrestling, Ben.
Wow.
So keep that in mind. But all that being said, Miles is the national champion, two-time All-American, 22-0. He knows. It's just his seventh time on the mat with Bo Nichols. So I was surprised by that, but not surprised at the same time. Bo Nichols is a stud. So the thing that disappointed me more than giving up that takedown for Miles, I don't know if you noticed this, but Miles had Bo Nichols on a crackdown on two separate occasions.
Yes.
Where he had both of his arms wrapped around both of Bo Nichols' knees. And
no, he never had both of his knees.
Yes, not locked. I disagree. I can show you the film.
Well, what I saw happening here, I'll tell you why, is because there was a very highly rated high school recruit behind me, and I will not say his name on this podcast. That would embarrass him. That'd be mean. But so Miles is in a crackdown, and Bo slips his other leg in, so his legs are now next to each other. But Miles is around only the one leg still. I don't know if you can.
Well, you're not letting me finish, Ben. You're letting
okay.
me finish.
Sorry.
On two separate occasions, he had both arms around the legs for less than a second, and he switched to one.
I don't recall that. I'm up to rewatch this.
You're gonna have to rewatch it because he did it two separate times in the crackdown. It's like, dude, when you're wrestling a scrambler, you have two
both
arms.
Legs.
You keep both legs. And I saw him two. And so the second he switched to one leg, I thought he had them both times. It's like you when you got two legs on a scrambler and they're on their butt, they're the odds are against them.
I don't think now, he had both legs. I really don't, Tommy. I'm gonna have to go rewatch.
Ben, he had both legs for less. It was less than a second.
Okay.
It was less than a second, but he had both hands on both legs for less than a second on two separate occasions.
Okay.
Because I said it out loud. I said it out loud when I was sitting next to Miles' family, who, by the way, they're a great family. And, I was disappointed in that tactically more than giving up the takedown off of the standing Grammy.
Okay. So I don't recall that. I'm going to have to go rewatch it, but I'll tell you what I remember and why I remember it. So the kid behind me, who's a very highly recruited high school prospect. So both
has he committed yet?
I don't believe so. He was wearing a Penn State jacket, but I don't believe he's committed. I'm not 100% on. I don't think so. So Bo slips the one leg into the other leg, and as soon as he does that, both times this kid goes, "Why would he give him both legs? That's so dumb. What's he doing?" And I'm thinking like, just because you can't see the whole picture yet doesn't mean the picture's dumb. And if Bo Nickel's doing something, you better believe there's a plan. And you can't see what his plan is right now, but I guarantee there's one. And so, he was trying to sound smart in front of his friends, but he's like, "That's so dumb. What's he doing?" And then I believe both times, I think one time Bo got the takedown and the other time it ended up in a stalemate type of position.
Right.
But, so that's why I remember him not having both legs, but I'm going to have to go rewatch what you're saying. Okay, so the other thing I want to say here is David Taylor was nice enough to help me get the tickets to the match. And that morning, he was texting with me. He was actually in Dubai, and he was texting with me, and he said, "Bo's a gamer. He's going to show up. And Anthony Cassar is a great matchup against Colin Moore." And I thought his text was pretty prophetic of what happened that night.
No doubt. And the one thing Bo Nickel did that I didn't think he was capable of in a big match situation.
Shooting.
I think the straw that broke the camel's back was his two deep high crotch counterattacks I don't think Miles Martin could have been prepared for that, because Bo,
yes.
I've never really seen Bo do that in a high level match unless you can correct me if I'm wrong, if that's happened in big match.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think he caught Miles off guard for sure.
So, yeah, so, I mean, you got to give him the credit. I know that Miles was 2-4 going into that match, but I was taking Miles Martin. I think
yeah,
you were, too, at the time.
I picked him also. He looked great for this. Man, after seeing what happened there, I don't know. I have a hard time picking him again.
Well, I know that Bo Nickel isn't actually 8 points better than Miles Martin.
I was surprised.
But it's a tougher call to make. But I still think he can win. But I think that you can't. An unbiased party can't possibly favor Miles the next time. But I'm gonna. Ha!
Okay, so Colin Moore, another one where I just watched one of these flow clips over and over and over again, and it was the last takedown. And what Anthony Cassar did to Colin Moore. It was something that if one of my youth athletes said, "I'm going to do this to someone this weekend," I would say, "That shit ain't going to work. It's not going to work, Tommy." He literally,
right.
Colin Moore's on a single leg. He's deep waist. He bumps him to, and somehow, without going to his hip, knocks him over and then attacks the opposite side to score. And it was like, wow, just for Colin Moore being a very high-level athlete, I was shocked it worked. And, one thing I'm going to say about I saw Colin Moore kind of pacing the entire night. And I don't know if he was nervous about the matchup or if he was just into it, but Colin Moore did not look like Colin Moore.
No, his body language as he was walking onto the mat was different. And his movement and the way that he, stayed in his stance throughout the match. He was out of sorts. He was either not right physically or mentally. He was affected by the environment, because that was not the Colin Moore I've seen. And what's uplifting, the silver lining, not even silver lining, but the optimist in me is like, I mean, obviously that environment, there's not an environment at the Big Ten Internationals that are going to replicate what the Buckeyes were up against in Rec Hall. And so I'm hoping that it's a different story when you get into more of a neutral environment and it's a new day, so to speak. I mean, the Buckeyes are still hammers, but Colin Moore was affected by what happened Saturday night, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and Tommy, I also think it could be a weight cutting problem, because if you remember how bad he looked in the mornings at Vegas,
right?
I think it could be one of those type issues. You remember, obviously, Kyle Snyder, when he was cutting a lot of weight to 97, was significantly less effective certain times, probably because he had a hard weight cut.
Right.
So great job by Anthony Kassar. Obviously, there was reports coming out of State College that Shakur Rashid had beat Anthony Kassar the day before or 2 days before in a wrestle-off. So Penn State definitely has some question marks on what they're going to do with that weight class before the end of the year.
No doubt. I mean, obviously, Kale made the right move for whatever reason. It was a good move. If Kassar, in fact, lost to Rashid on Friday in a wrestle-off, what a gutsy move that proved to pay off.
Yeah, hell of a move by Kale. Okay, so Tommy, I'm going to be honest with you. I was actually cheering against Colin Moore. You want to know why?
Because you wanted Snyderman to create an atmosphere that was second to none.
Yes, absolutely. I wanted Snyderman to have to go get a major technical fall, and that happened. And Tommy, I have never seen Kyle Snyder out of sorts. Kyle Snyder was out of sorts. The man tried a lat drop, Tommy. Have you ever seen Kyle Snyder try a lat drop before?
But this is where
I didn't know this was possible. Okay.
You have
I didn't know this was possible.
I've been pretty realistic in my assessment of the first 9 matches. So I feel like that should carry some credence in what I'm about to say about the Snyder match.
Okay. But
did Snyder try a lat drop or not?
Just say yes or no.
Yeah, oh yeah, he did.
Was that out of character?
And yes, 100%. So the reason is, though, Ben, he had to win by 13. He's wrestling the number 3 guy in the country. Yes. And I know that this is a guy that he tech-falled last year. But
wait, he tech-falled Nick Nevels last year? I don't recall that.
Yeah, he did in the duel.
Wow.
But here's the thing, Ben. When you're wrestling a guy that is good and he has an assignment that is very specific and it's a low bar, a low threshold, and that assignment is you got to lose by 13 or less, it's going to be easy for him to do that.
Yes.
Plus,
yes,
he intuitively knows Snyder's going to be coming after me like a madman. He's probably going to be sloppy and foolish. Maybe I can sneak a takedown or two.
Which he did.
And in my opinion, Kyle Snyder, yes, if he would have just been workmanlike, maybe he would have won by more. But since he knew he had to win by 13, not it wasn't an option, I think you have to change your style. You have to look for backs. You have to look for things that don't make a lot of sense. And by the time he hit the lat drop end, I think Nevels had one or maybe already 2 takedowns.
One.
And so I don't blame him. I don't blame him for hitting the lat drop. I don't think it was foolish.
Yeah.
Have you ever wrestled a guy that was really good that you had to pin for the team?
Yeah, I pinned them all, I think.
No, that you had to pin, like the match is on the line.
I believe so. I mean the one where I couldn't. The one was I bumped up to wrestle Roger Kish, and I knew we needed a pin at the national duels, and I bumped up to the next weight class to wrestle Roger Kish. And I was up 5-1 with Ryan Time with 20
seconds. Was it the last match? Ben, was it the final match?
It was not. There was 2 matches left.
So in theory, a pin would have helped your team. That's entirely different from what I'm talking about.
Well, we lost by 2 points, so a pin would have won it.
Right. Did you pin Roger?
No, I did not.
Okay, so here's what I'm getting at, Ben, is that
okay.
I had to do this. I wrestled in the National Duel Semis. It was 17-13 going to the final weight against Leon Scrump. I was ranked 2nd in the country. He was ranked 3rd. And my team's down by 4, and it's like I would rather lose to this dude and go for the pin than anything. And I was hitting inside trips, flip headlocks, all kinds of goofy shit because I know I'm not just going to half Nelson him and pin him or something like that. And you wrestle in an incredibly foolish way in order to get that done. Ironically, I went to overtime with Crump. I think I would have won in a decisive way had I not hit foolish moves. And what's funny is I took him down and he laid on his back and I ended up pinning him.
But what? I remember that, Tommy. Now that you said that, I remember that match.
But it's not. That wasn't by design, even though it was a phenomenal story and a lot of fun. I didn't do that by design. But I wrestled in a foolish way to get the pin. I think Kyle had to do that. And I just don't think that anything that he did was to me, something that I couldn't have seen myself doing.
Okay. So in my opinion. That's fair. You know, the one thing that this opened up about Kyle is he's probably the greatest wrestler in America right now. You can make an argument for Jordan Burroughs. But he's not the greatest bonus point scorer in America.
Yeah, that's probably,
you know,
fair.
He doesn't have a strong top game, which hurts a lot. You know, as you can see, Zane chose top and got 8 points in the last period because of it. And you know, when Neville's can stall him, he doesn't have a great angle game, meaning he's pretty straightforward. And you know, one of his strongest points is that defensively, it's damn near impossible to score on him. And that's one of the strongest points of him. And so, you know, is he the greatest wrestler in America? Yes. You know, you could argue him or Jordan Burroughs. Is he the greatest bonus point scorer in America? Absolutely not.
No, he's not, but that's okay. I'll take the good with the bad. We got an Olympic champion on our roster. What a great match.
Yes.
Closing thoughts, final thoughts?
Yeah, so I do. I think, like I said, and I said this earlier, I think Ohio State wrestled less than they are, and I think Penn State wrestled more than they are. And there's this concept in sports psych. It's a really funny one, Tommy. This coaches can take a lesson for this because this has been proven. Oftentimes when teams perform poorly, their coaches yell at them, okay? Now, everyone's got a median or average performance. So frequently when you perform less than your best, you at least return to the median, right, Tommy? So when someone performs poorly, the team yells and they perform better. The coach envisions him yelling at the team as him helping the team when the team was just going to return to the median, okay? And on the opposite side, when teams perform better than they're supposed to or better than average and the coach pats them on the back, frequently what they do is they return to the median, return to the average. And so then the coach thinks, well, that didn't help. But in essence, they were just going to return to the median anyways. And so, as you've said numerous times, this environment can't be replicated at Nationals and it can't be replicated at Big Ten. So I think what we're going to see is a slight return to the median from both teams, which means Ohio State's going to perform a little better and Penn State's going to perform a little worse. And that's just how it is. And so is that going to be enough for Ohio State to win? I think there's an opportunity. Is Penn State going to go down without swinging? I don't think so. So I'm really looking forward to the Big Ten Championships and the Nationals, and I'm sure you probably feel the same way.
I am. Man, you're a smart guy.
I try to read a lot of books, Tommy.
I think that you're correct. I think that it's still a freaking slugfest for the national title, especially with Jason Nolf. I know he's going to return to the lineup, which makes Penn State better than what they were on Saturday night. But to your point, there'll be more return to the median for some other guys. On top of Jason Nolf, even though he's going to be in a singlet at the Big Ten and Nationals, you know, it still remains to be seen how effective he's truly going to be.
Yeah.
Because if he's in some dogfights because of his injury, that obviously negates a lot of things that they were counting on 3 weeks ago. So I just think there's so much up in the air circumstance. On top of the fact that, you know, some teams might be better off in tournaments because of their lineup than duels, so on and so forth. There's a lot of things to consider. I don't think anything's decided right now, in my opinion. I think it's still a crapshoot on who's going to win the title. But it was a phenomenal event unto itself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I loved it. I had a great time. You know, I think maybe I'm going to have to make a habit of going to one of the best, pick out one duel every year. I know last year I went to Oklahoma State, Iowa in Stillwater. So much fun. This year I went to this one. Man, you know, obviously the environment at Nationals is fantastic. But some of these dual meets, wow, they are just outstanding. And I had a great time. So hope everyone enjoyed listening to this. Tommy, I got nothing else for you.
Thanks, brother. And thank you, Defend Soap. Defend what you have built.
Yes, sir. Have a good day, everybody.
All right, man. See you.
Peace.
You are listening to the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you by Defend Soap. Defend what you have built.